They are not trying to be part of the American way of life. They are not trying to be part of our culture. They are here with an agenda to make Islam the law of the land. Of course, not all Muslims are like that. But we've been infiltrated with this kind of agenda. And America has to wake up, because we are strangling ourselves with our political correctness. What's going on?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Good evening, Radio Jihadists. You're back with Radio Jihad, the patriotic resistance movement. I'm Vito Esposito. Mamma mia, no Sharia. I'll call a number tonight.
Area code 347-857-1380. Radio Jihad.
I'm joined by that no pork eating American lover. Al, how you doing, Al?
Hey, Vito, I am doing great, and I am glad to be here today, and what a week. Oh, my goodness.
Oh, my Gotti, it's been a hell of a week, and we've got Gotti on the line. Good evening, Gotti. America
Akbar. Welcome, fellow infidels. Mamma mia, no Sharita. Hello, Alan.
Hey there. Mamma mia,
oh my
no
Gotti.
Sharia. Yes,
Vito, if you can make it through the show without cracking up, I will give you $100. You just blew it.
Well, I got it. Oh my God!
I knew this was going to happen. And I knew it. I'm not going to make any high jokes either.
All right. Yeah, don't get short with me now, will you?
It has been one hell of a week, no doubt.
It really has. It's been a, and of course, what was it? When was that? The Zimmerman verdict? Was it Sunday? Saturday?
It was
Saturday.
A verdict?
Well, you know, Saturday evening, the jury finally came to a decision, and lo and behold, from the race baiting president to the race baiters of Jackson and Sharpton, the state didn't make their case, and Zimmerman was found not guilty, as you all know. And you know what's interesting about this whole thing. Was it 3 weeks? And all during that 3 weeks, all these pundits on TV were saying how the state didn't make their case, how the state was poor in their prosecution, how the state was negligent in showing fault, and you know, and he thought, okay, well, you know, it's still he was tried in the court of public opinion, especially by the black separatists that are black nationalists, black separatists in the United States who tried to make this into a black versus white issue, yet CNN redefining Hispanic in this country, Latino. Now if you're a white Latino, the operative word is white, okay? And as Eric or Iowa put in the chat room rightfully, you know, he was a white Hispanic, and CNN exploited that fact. So they were trying to make this such a racially charged issue. And sadly, in 2008, a dapper black man was running for president, and he talked about unifying a nation, you know, that hope and change. And what we found out was words mean absolutely nothing to Sheikh Obama. Barack Hussein Obama just says things to blow smoke up the people's ass. And, of course, the media loves his little sound bites. And there's been no unification of races in this country. I mean, right out of the box, We saw the division within races. A cop, a white cop in Cambridge, Massachusetts, detains a friend of Obama who happens to be black, and it becomes a black and white issue. And then all of a sudden, the great divider goes and has this beer summit, and all the media dogs lap it up, you know. But he turned into a racial issue. Now, you know, you fast forward to 2012, and you have this tragedy in Orlando, or outside of Orlando in Sanford, Florida. But no one cares about the facts. You know, the fact is George Zimmerman was beat by Trayvon Martin, a black dude. But why was he here in Orlando? He was wearing a hoodie. Okay. You know what? God bless you. You can wear anything you want in this country. And Van Jones now is going to dress his kids up in tuxedos so he looks like white, so they all look like white people, so they won't be characterized as being thugs. Okay? So Van Jones now is going to go out and he's going to buy tuxedos for his kids, his black kids, so that they look white. So now it's turned into a black and white issue in this country.
Was it ever not a black and white issue?
It's always been a black and white issue, but you know
exactly.
What? I think before 2009, though, Gotti, the race relations were getting much better in this country. If not, they were certainly on the mend. And, you know, people like Al Sharpton should have been totally discredited with Tawana Brawley case when he freaking lied. He made up stories, and his character is such that he lies about race in order to advance his radical black nationalist agenda. And then you got Jesse Jackson, who has also been was being discredited, and he was an afterthought. I mean, here's a guy who had a love child. He was paying the mother through the church, okay? And he's nothing but a thief, an antagonist, and an agitator. And he was becoming irrelevant. And then suddenly Obama comes on stage, and now you know he's going to heal the world. He's going to keep the waters from rising. He gets a Nobel Peace Prize for doing absolutely nothing. And when he becomes president, what happens? All he does is he divides. He divides rich and poor. He divides black and white. And this
he divides
case,
Muslim and infidel, too.
Yes, he does. Thank you. He divides Muslims and infidels. You're absolutely correct. So I got something that I prepared, just a quick... And I wrote it down because I didn't want to forget. So in the wake of the Zimmerman verdict, and this is what got me, was Dwayne Wade was one of several athletes who tweeted. And Dwayne Wade's comments really, really hit a nerve. In the wake of Zimmerman's verdict, Dwayne Wade tweeted, "How is he going to explain this verdict to his sons?" Well, Dwayne, I have a great answer. You can start by telling your sons, in America, you're innocent until proven guilty. And in America, if you are brought to trial, you will be judged by a jury of your peers. And in the case of the state of Florida versus George Zimmerman, the state of Florida failed to prove their case against George Zimmerman, and a jury of Zimmerman's peers found him not guilty. That's what you tell your sons, Dwayne. You tell your sons that you're judged by a jury of your peers. And in America, you're innocent until proven guilty. The case was brought to trial strictly on emotion. It was supposed to be black against white, white against black. Race baiters like Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton discarded the rule of law and convicted George Zimmerman strictly on emotion, all in an effort to pit blacks against whites. Unfortunately, the two elitist race baiters didn't bargain for George Zimmerman being a Latino. See, I think that they thought he was a white Jew, and I'm serious about that. Then, of course, President Black Separatist inserted himself in the fray and offered his 2 cents. Oh, if he had a son, he would look like Trayvon Martin. Oh, really, Barack? Which one? The 12-year-old boy pictured in the establishment media reports? Or the 17-year-old that was wearing a hoodie, pot-smoking, break-in specialist thug? Oh, we have yet to see that picture. Then Obama chimes in again after the jury of Zimmerman's peers reach a verdict. Trayvon's death is a tragedy for America. How is Trayvon's death a tragedy for America? Is it because he lived in a broken home, his parents were divorced, or because the value system in the black community is to create a victimhood status whereby there's an excuse for every lack of opportunity because of the color of their skin? Yet America reveres people of all color, whether they're African American, is elected to Congress, runs a Fortune 500 company, or they're an athlete. They play football, baseball, basketball, golf. It doesn't matter. The player's black and you're white. You know, when you're growing up, you're excited about the player of your favorite team because he's a player of your team, because of his talents, her talents. Whether it's Willie Randolph, second baseman for the New York Yankees, Oscar Robertson or Willis Reed of the NBA, Tiger Woods of the PGA, or columnist Professor Walter Williams. People of all color endear themselves to these whole high-profile individuals irrespective of the color of their skin. Sheikh Obama has made this case about race. The president of the United States, who told yet another lie about uniting America, has made this case about race. He could have started a healing process in America because President Blowhard speaks about the rule of law. He's proving time and again there's no respect for the rule of law on his part. They're only words. Words that make for a great soundbite. And again, he includes a caveat. You see, the radical left-wing Marxist occupying the White House included words about gun violence in his post-verdict statement. Obama's on a quest to shoot down the Second Amendment of the Constitution and uses any tragedy he can to exploit the issue, and now uses the African-American people to assist in tearing down the United States Constitution. Whether it's Sandy Hook or now Trayvon Martin, the facts of the Zimmerman case didn't matter to the disgraced lawyer, President Blowhard. It's sad state of affairs in the United States of America. The president of the United States not doing a damn thing to mend the racial fences in America. He's only adding fuel to the fire. No wonder he had to surrender his law license. He's not worthy of even keeping it. So America has a black supremacist in the White House who's aligned himself with black separatists such as Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson. He's aligned himself with domestic terrorists such as Bernardine Dorn and Bill Ayers. And he's aligned himself with a terrorist organization, the Muslim Brotherhood. Dismantle the Constitution. Use blacks, use illegals, use Democrats, and use Muslims who despise the rule of law. A rule of law healing America and bringing the nation together is of no concern to this president. And that's my rant for today.
Wow. Plenty of applause there.
You know, the president of the United States had a golden opportunity to really be a statesman. And he's had it on many occasions, and this one is one that he really could have shined. And I didn't mean that in a negative manner. I didn't mean, no, I'm not making any racial slurs there. He probably could have helped his poll ratings that are in the tank right now. But he chooses to go the socialist way. He chooses to go the racist way. And he continues at every vantage point he gets to chime in a racist fashion, in a Marxist fashion. Why do you bring the gun law into this whole thing? You know, the proper response from this man is, those of you, I'm asking everyone to be calm. I'm asking for all people in all color look, we have a rule of law in this country. You're innocent until proven guilty. You have a jury of your peers who hears a case, and he was found not guilty. That's it. Nothing about gun laws in the United States. Nothing about prancing out the Martin family and back to him while he signs another bullshit executive order. But that's what this guy's going to do. He's been absolutely useless as president of the United States. And he's what he's done is he's set us back to the 60s again.
Mm-hmm.
And it's awful. For someone like Dwayne Wade, who's supposed to be an educated multimillionaire, to say, what do I tell my sons now? You tell them exactly what happened. You know what? If you do something wrong, you're going to jail. But you know when you go to jail, you're still innocent until proven guilty. And when you have your day in court, you say your piece. And then you let the chips fall where they may. Is Aaron Hernandez, formerly of the New England Patriots, is he guilty? Well, it sure as hell looks like it, doesn't it? He's got his day in court, though. You know, where's...
Now, Vito,
go ahead.
I was just going to say that what President Obama has done has filtered into the community. For example, Marnie Jameson writes in the Orlando Sentinel that the Valerie Houston of the Allen Chapel AME Church in Sanford made these quotes at her church service on Sunday. She said, quote, "We are African Americans. We are people. We were allowed to go to the store and buy Arizona iced tea and a package of Skittles and go home," she said. She said, "Now is the time to lift our national policy from the quicksand of racial injustice to the solid rock of human dignity." Those issues of inequity and injustice were echoed in churches across the region. Can anyone explain to me what is racial injustice to the solid rock of human dignity? What is it, and how do you get there?
Well, one, it's a great soundbite, but go ahead. If Gotti understands that, that's great.
It means
but
nothing.
It's a great soundbite.
Yeah, it means nothing. What does it mean to you, Gotti?
I'm trying to figure that one out. You know, I'm amazed at this whole thing because, once again, you know, like Vito just pointed out, Obama's talking out of both sides of his mouth. You know, he wants to bring the country together, yet it was his Justice Department that forced this entire issue to go to court to begin with. It was his Department of Justice that sent people down to Sanford, Florida, to help organize rallies.
Right.
You know,
to
all
the
this
community
is coming
relations?
Out from Judicial Watch now.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, Gotti. I am certainly going to write my congressman because I would want yet another investigation of this man. How in the world, how dare the President of the United States instruct his Justice Department to spend American taxpayer money to conduct protests against a man who hasn't even been tried in a court of law? And President Blowhard consistently talks about the rule of law, the rule of law. You know, listen to his sound bites, the rule of law. Even this response, the tragedy in America, and the rule of law, that, you know, he uses the word the rule of law, just like he uses the word democracy, refuses to use constitutional republic. This is very, very troubling. Why did the Department of Justice spend almost $10,000 in sponsoring protests against George Zimmerman in Sanford, Florida, which, in my opinion, just inflamed the racial tensions in a small community that shouldn't even have been a center of racism?
Well, before that... Well, it became racist when Al Sharpton and Jesse Jackson came to Sanford, Florida, and started having protests based on race. That is when the race issue started. It started when the New Panther Party originally called Zimmerman Jewish because of his last name. They made it racial. And then somehow, between all that, the blurring of the racial lines, George Zimmerman is Hispanic. He speaks fluent Spanish. Now all of a sudden, they've redefined race into a white Hispanic. I don't know how that happens.
Well,
it defies all logic.
What exactly is Hispanic? How come I don't hear about the president being referred to as a black white American? I mean, look at the way they're spinning this. Isn't he half white?
Yes, he is. And that was, I'm telling you, that was CNN who coined, or at least that's where I first heard it, was CNN coining the phrase of George Zimmerman being a white Hispanic.
Why white Hispanic?
Yeah. Where do you get that from? Where in the hell do you even come up with that description? All of a sudden, it's Latinos. L.A. is full of Latinos. Well, now I want to know, are they white Latinos or are they black Latinos? And if they're black Latinos, what's the difference between a white Latino? Are they that more downtrodden? Are they more of a victim than a white Latino? Did they cross the El Paso River with their passport, or did they come, you know, through other methods? I mean, what's the difference?
So he's a white pick brew, right? He's a white Hispanic Jew, so he's a white pick brew. I mean, what the hell is this splitting stuff? Until they start calling Obama a white black American, I'm not gonna. It's just BS. More BS.
Yeah, and Holger brings up a good point that now we have a white Latino who is also a cracker.
Yeah,
cracker ass.
Oh yeah,
yes, but he was a matzah cracker.
Yeah, unleavened.
No, so there's
cracker.
There's no outrage then of George Zimmerman. I mean, of Trayvon Martin using a derogatory word to describe a person we thought was white as a cracker. And then we have Van Jones on CNN, the old, what was it called, Fire Squad, or what is it called? What was it called? Rapid Fire. They're resurrecting this old Crossfire. And they had Newt Gingrich and they had Van Jones. And in a span of 10, 12 seconds, Van Jones used the N-word three times. Now, I'd like to know why Van Jones is still on CNN, why he hasn't been fired. And because 30 years ago, Paula Deen may have used the word N, the N-word, may have said it, and now she's lost all sponsorships. She's been shunned from the earth. She needs to go back to where she is. She can't show her face anymore, and she's such an outcast because 30 years ago, she admitted under oath that she used the N-word, and in less than 30 seconds, Van Jones used it three times on the air last night.
Hmm. Well, Vito, before our guest comes on tonight, who happens to be Mr. C.L. Bryant, Mr. C.L. Bryant is an outspoken Baptist minister, and he's also a former president of the NAACP, has a movie out that you can get on Netflix called The Runaway Slave. Now, before he comes on, you have some breaking information regarding this case that was withheld by the media. Do you think now's a good time to come out with this breaking news?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know it was breaking. I mean, you and I were talking about this, and
It's breaking. It is huge.
Well, you know, Trayvon's past is that he had, I believe he had a history of breaking and entering as well, because that was not brought up. In Fort Lauderdale area, he had broken into a house or two, and I'm not sure of how many. But on the night of the shooting, police found what they labeled as burglary material on his possession. They found a screwdriver and several other items on him, and Holger, you distracted me, Holger. How could he break and enter? He was only 12. That's right. He was just a child, Holger, right? He was just a child. But I got a firsthand report that Trayvon Martin had some burglary tools on him that were found by the police. So, and of course, I don't believe that ever made it into the media, and I don't think it. I think it may have been suppressed by the judge, but I'm not 100% sure. I cannot speak to that. So,
yeah, but still, I mean, that fact alone and his history is that defines the case. We learned everything about Mr. Zimmerman. Everything, and yet we knew nothing about Trayvon Martin. All that information was withheld. It could have been because he was a minor, but I think that it is relevant to who he is and why he left South Florida. He left South Florida because he was in trouble with the law. His mother, who happens to have multiple degrees, very bright, very articulate, shipped him up to Orlando to daddy to straighten him out. This was a troubled kid. This should have been, he's not the innocent 14-year-old picture that we see presented for the last year.
Yeah, you know, you want to talk about a media that skewed this whole thing. I mean, you just can't get over how, in this democracy, as Sheikh Obama likes to talk about, who basically omits the function of law in the United States and the fact that we are a constitutional republic. But Zimmerman was tried in the court of law, and I'll tell you what, I do believe that between the new Black Panthers, Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton, when they heard the name Zimmerman, and they heard that Trayvon was a black youth who was shot down and killed in Florida, they got their happy asses down to Sanford, and they used this tragedy. And then somebody must have told these two asses, as somebody used in the chat room, ass clowns, that he was actually Hispanic. And they had heart palpitations, because how are they going to exploit this? And they weren't astute enough to think of it back, 5 months ago, or a year ago, until CNN brought it up that he was a white Hispanic. And had they only thought about that, they could have even exploited it even further. So they got their themselves back to their respective areas, New York and Chicago, and they weren't found again in Florida. And they realized, oh crap, he wasn't a Jew. Oh crap, Zimmerman isn't white. But we can still make this about a racial issue. I tell you, man, it's certainly, Florida has had two, Central Florida at least has had two issues, one with Casey Anthony and now with the Martin Zimmerman case. In both cases, the defendants were found not guilty. And certainly the one person I thought that would be guilty would have been Casey Anthony. But George Zimmerman, everybody wanted to forego the injuries that he sustained at the hands of Trayvon Martin. And I read another account where Trayvon Martin went behind a house went out of sight. And as Zimmerman got back in his truck, and then they said the police were coming. So Zimmerman apparently gets out of his truck to greet the police, and that's when Martin came out of nowhere and attacked him. Well, he wasn't looking for a black man. And that's what they wanted to make this as an issue, that he was hunting black people. And he was far from it. There have been other break-ins in that community, but that's irrelevant. He had a broken nose. That's irrelevant. His head was being smashed against the concrete road, but that's irrelevant. So what is irrelevant is they went ahead, the black leadership in this country, including Obama, tried the case before he got his day in court. They found him guilty, and Trayvon becomes a saint. No, Mother Teresa's a saint. Pope John Paul II's a saint.
Rabbi, welcome.
Hello.
Shalom. What's your clergy view on all this?
Well, I did a little more than a clergy view on it. I actually wrote up a piece on root cause analysis. Because that's
okay.
One of the things I do. Because it was surprising me that nobody anywhere is trying to find out what the root cause of this whole thing was, because you can't fix it until you know how it's broken.
Good point.
So what I did was I used a methodology that we use in technical problem solving called the 5-Why. The technique is basically you ask why 5 times. No preconceived notions or anything. You ask the question, you find the evidence, and then you ask the question again. You know, as each one of them, you each time leads you to a different question. Eventually, usually within 5 times, you will get to what the root cause of the problem was. So basically, I went through and I did a root cause analysis on it. So February 26th, George Zimmerman shoots Trayvon Martin, killing Martin. Why did he shoot him? A fight between the two resulted in a fear for his life on the part of Zimmerman. So why was Zimmerman in fear of his life? Martin had confronted and assaulted Zimmerman for following him. Why was Zimmerman following Martin? Martin was unknown to Zimmerman and was cutting between houses and through yards. Zimmerman determined this to be suspicious. Okay, now this happens a lot of times in the technical problem solving methodology. We'll get to a split, and we have to start over again. So let's start with Martin. Okay, why was Martin unknown to Zimmerman? Martin had only recently moved from Miami Gardens, Florida, into the area to live with his father. Why did Martin come to live with his father? Martin's mother had sent him to live with his father due to multiple suspensions from school for skipping school, tagging, possession of stolen property, possession of burglary tools, and culminating in his suspension for possession of drug residue. Why was Martin in such continual trouble in school? Martin had become enamored with the gangster lifestyle. More accurately, he would be defined as a wannabe thug. And according to a hadith of the Urban Dictionary, a wannabe thug, often illiterate and an inhabitant of a downtrodden ghetto that hangs around in gangs, largely associated with the African-American subculture. These try-hard wannabe gangsters attempt to make themselves appear like real criminals by graffitiing buildings, smoking and selling dope, and trying to look all badass and macho and yo shit, you know. And to this, that Martin came from a high crime area of Miami Grove, Florida, where the crime rate is twice the national average. Miami Gardens is part of Dade County, which has 54 different gangs. So why did Martin want to be a gangster? We come down to root cause. Because he had been indoctrinated into the liberal philosophy promoting the victim mentality. Liberal victim philosophy promotes the idea that you are not responsible for your actions because society has kept you enslaved. You are therefore excused from any expectation of civilized behavior because you are not able to control yourself and you are unable to rise above your situation. Okay, now we move on to Zimmerman. Why did Zimmerman determine what Martin was doing was suspicious? Zimmerman was part of a neighborhood watch association. He did not recognize Martin as a resident of the gated community, since Martin was from Miami and had only recently moved in with his father. Why was there a need for a neighborhood watch? The neighborhood watch was developed due to a rising problem of break-ins, robberies, and home invasions in the gated community. Why was there such a problem with crime in the gated community? Because the retreat at Twin Lakes is located in Sanford, Florida. Sanford, Florida has a crime rating of high, according to citydata.com. Sanford's violent crime rate is 38% higher than the national average. Sanford's property crime rate is 53% higher than the national average. Sanford has a higher crime rate in every single category than 94% of the rest of the cities in the state of Florida.
Whoa.
Why is there such a high crime rate in Sanford, Florida? With a population of less than 54,000, Sanford's police department is comprised of only 140 officers over three shifts. That's an average of about 47 officers per shift. The police are supplemented by trained volunteers from the community and neighborhood watch programs. Why are steps not being taken to reduce the crime rate? And here we come to root cause. The city government is aware of the problem. However, a small police force in an excessively high crime area with a part-time city government cannot effectively address the issues adequately. It is left to the citizens to take steps to protect themselves, their neighbors, and their neighborhoods from criminals. Police are hamstrung by the politically correct liberal mentalities, a lack of resources, and a local government structure that is ill-equipped to deal with the issues. Sanford's police and the citizens are basically under siege on two fronts. From the politically correct, it's not the criminal's fault, it's society mentality on the one side and the criminal element on the other. So, from two root causes, we come down to conclusions. My conclusions are these. The liberal progressive agenda continues to control the schools and social programs. Criminal activity will continue to rise because it is excusable. They can't help themselves, so we, the liberal progressives, have to control them for their own good. They will pump billions of dollars into failed social programs, as they always do, that only exacerbate the problem. Number two, as long as the black community continues to buy into the liberal victim narrative and mentality, they will see no reason to change behaviors and will be doomed to the liberal progressive plantation. Number three, the race baiters will kick into high gear because it's a very lucrative trade to keep racism as a perceived fact, regardless of the evidence. The victimhood juggernaut will continue unabated. Number four, as crime continues to rise and the economy continues to stagnate or decline, cities will continue to cut police protection, leaving a vulnerable population. Number five, as crime continues to rise, more and more neighborhoods will elect to protect themselves. Number six, the liberal progressives will continue to try to disarm the people, and we will see more and more George Zimmermans being put on trial for trying to protect themselves and their neighbors. The message from the administration, the Democratic Party, and the rest of the liberal progressives is very clear. We, the government, have no obligation to protect you. That's directly from the Supreme Court. We, the government, will not let you protect yourselves. This is evidenced by federal, state, and local gun control laws being passed around the country. Crime is a means to an end, and we will use it to its fullest regardless of the casualties. The only option that is left to you, the citizen, is to close yourself up in your home, forget about your neighbors, and hope and pray the criminals don't find you an attractive target. Unless we all pull together as Americans instead of these hyphenated Americans, as the liberals have sorted us for easy identification, take a stand against the insanity and finally restore some common sense to government in particular and society in general, this is only going to get worse.
You know, you've got some interesting statistics there. The crime issue, did not know that, never heard it. 94 percentile in Florida, so they rank in the highest, in one of the highest crime statistics in the state of Florida. You know, that alone should have been first and foremost. You know, of course, the race issue overshadows all that, and now I understand why they made it a racial issue. They don't want to talk about the crime spree occurrences in Sanford, Florida. That's immaterial. And at the boot, it was a gated community where homes were still getting broken into.
Right, right. And one of the things that was brought out, but I couldn't find any verifiable evidence. I mean, empirically, it makes sense. One of the things that I noticed several articles, not related to the Zimmerman case at all, but related to Sanford, being the one of the major stopping points on the OxyContin trail.
Where's that?
It's how they move OxyContin from southern Florida up to the north to Detroit to New York to other places.
Gotcha.
That kind of highway that they travel to get that material to out to the United States comes up directly through Sanford. But as I said, I couldn't find any verifiable evidence of it, so I didn't put it into the article.
Well, you know, that's interesting because that says a lot about what's happening in this country with the drug issue that's occurring. I mean, that's a real chronic problem. You have an issue of break-ins in Sanford, Florida, and in the community in which George Zimmerman resided. That's a huge issue. I mean, if you've ever been broken into, you know the violation that you feel. You know that to think that somebody was in your house that stole your belongings, that stole your mementos, that really infringed upon your space, and you're never secure.
Well, there's some other interesting things going on here. The demographics are very interesting, too, because they want to keep playing this off as a race thing, but if you actually look at the demographics of Sanford, Florida, it's pretty well split 50-50 between white and blacks and Hispanics. You know, it's there is an even distribution of it. So obviously this is not a racist community. It's a very well-mixed community.
Rabbi, I'm still trying to figure out, because you're saying you don't want to bring race into it. What does cotton have to do with this? I think that's a pretty racist remark.
Cotton?
Yeah, you were talking about cotton.
OxyContin. Dude, that's,
I mean,
racist.
Right away you're bringing cotton into it, you know? Okay,
yo,
let's bring back the color.
Yo, dog, that's racist. But the demographics also show that pretty much in every presidential election, it has been split 50-50 between conservatives and liberals. So there's not anything that you can point to say, oh, well, it's all, you know, it's a liberal, you know, area. It's a racial issue. And nothing fits. Nothing fits the narrative that's being portrayed out there in the media.
The only reason it's a racial issue is because Trayvon was black, period. There was nothing racial about it. If the break-ins in that neighborhood had been occurring, like we saw in court with Zimmerman's neighbor, who was assaulted by two people who broke into her home, if they had been white, and Zimmerman, leaving that night, saw a white guy in that fitting that same description, but he was white, he would have followed him and called the police too. It had
right.
No
now, here's another,
color.
Now, here's another interesting thing about Zimmerman that hasn't come out in the press. Zimmerman actually went to bat for a couple of young black kids who were being harassed by the police. He actually filed charges against the Sanford police on behalf of a black homeless man whom they were harassing. This doesn't sound like the actions of a racist.
He also tutored black kids in his own home.
Really?
Yeah, that's you know, the stuff that they're neglecting to tell us in the mainstream media, which are facts, like the rabbi just pointed out, he filed charges against the very police department that he was part of the community watch for, against them because of the way they mistreated a black homeless man, and he didn't care that the guy was black, he didn't like the way a man was being treated, because he didn't see color. And he tutored
kids
who were Hispanic and black.
Well, gentlemen, on the phone with us now, we have C.L. Bryant. C.L. Bryant, for those of you who may not be aware of his work, he's an outspoken Baptist minister. He's a radio host, television host, and the former president of the NAACP's Garland, Texas chapter. Now, he's born and raised in Shreveport, Louisiana. His parents were World War II vets. He has a master's degree in theology and is a Baptist minister and pastor. He is also a member of the Tea Party and has defended the group against allegations of racism. He's the founder of OneNationBackToGod.com and the creator of an independent film documentary called Runaway Slave, which I rented on Netflix 2 weeks ago, and it is an excellent movie. And this is a movie about the race to free the black community from the slavery of tyranny and liberal progressive policies. He's also the author of Lead Us to Temptation and Deliver Us to Evil. He's been married 36 years to Ms. Bryant. They have 4 children and 8 grandchildren. And with that introduction, I'd like to welcome Mr. C.L. Bryant to our show. Mr. Bryant, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me on. Glad to be here with you.
Well, thank you, sir, for coming on. So, what's on your mind? A lot of news. What would you, what message do you want to put out to America today?
Well, today is a day that we have been here in Orlando, and of course, we've been over at the NAACP convention. In fact, Deneen Borelli and I, at Fox News contributor, were actually kicked out, ushered out of the first rally that we went into on yesterday. I don't know how they singled us out. Everyone in there had cameras. And
Hold on. You were kicked out of a rally in Sanford yesterday. Hey, please elaborate on that, because that's very interesting.
In Orlando at the convention, we were going to attend the prayer breakfast, but they had called an emergency meeting, an emergency session, to discuss the Trayvon Martin thing. And so we decided to follow the crowd and join in with that. And unfortunately, I don't really know. I guess they recognized us. They recognized Deneen, or they may have just seen our – we had 2 camera people with us. But like I said, there were other cameras there. But they did, in fact, ask us to leave. And
On what grounds?
Well, because they didn't want us. They said it was a closed session. And gee whiz, we were just like everybody else that was there, and they did mention to my cameraman that we couldn't shoot, and but still we were texting and so forth on our phones, and they accused Deneen of taping it in spite of telling us that we couldn't, and it was totally unfounded. But they talk about violating civil rights and so forth. Ours was indeed violated in that sense.
Sounds like you were profiled.
Well, indeed we were. They were looking for black conservatives, and the message that we wanted to get out, and we've been, Rush and Glenn have been playing an ad for us over the past week, and you'll be hearing it in weeks to come, that we want a voice. Black conservatives want a voice in the NAACP because they they trumpet all the other voices that are around, but somehow the voice of black conservatives is not heard. I think they were on the lookout for us.
Go ahead, Vito.
I'm here.
Now, the NAACP, I didn't realize that there were distinctions within the NAACP, and it would seem to me that as you are a former president of the Garland, Texas chapter, you would be held in high esteem within that organization.
Well, the idea is they left me, as Ronald Reagan said. I didn't leave them. They left me. And of course, what I had began to do on this particular conservative journey that I'm on is rail against an organization that I feel was put in place to direct a certain mindset. A group of people lead them to a certain mindset. And over a period of years, 23 years since I've left them, the organization has been thoroughly and totally co-opted by the progressive left. That's evident. There's no hiding that fact. They are an arm of the Democrat Party, and I often speak out against that.
Well, that's something that we don't hear every day, that you are saying that the NAACP is an arm of the Democratic Party. Now, stalwarts of the NAACP is in Jesse Jackson and Al Sharpton. We're also here in Orlando, in Sanford in particular, at the beginning of this trial of Trayvon Martin, all the way throughout, and have developed a close tie with the parents. Are you saying that there could be a political element involved with their association with this case?
As the convention wore on, it was evident that what they were trying to do was to stimulate emotional feelings, in fact, fear, in the hearts of blacks and black parents that were there, that their young boys, their children were no longer safe on the street, because evidently there were people out there with guns who felt now it was okay to shoot black young men. Now, you know as well as I do that there's not an epidemic of white men killing black kids, so that's a fallacy, but there is a truth here. It is true that is an epidemic of black young men killing black young men. And so I think the energy of the organization could be definitely focused on a real problem. What we had with the Trayvon Martin and George Zimmerman thing, in my opinion, is you had two flawed individuals who met each other on a rainy night, got into a fight. And I don't know if you've ever had your head banged on the ground or the sidewalk, but it jars your whole head. And the human instinct, if you or I, black or white, whoever, somebody's on top of you in the dark, in the rain, and you don't know who your assailant is, if you can make that stop, you have a gun on you, Trayvon's still dead. But if I was a black man and he did that to me, nobody would have heard about it. If George Zimmerman was a black man and he was doing that to him, no one would have heard about it. And so there is what they have at their, they've loaded their guns to use this as some type of tool to further flame and divide the races in this country.
But, Pastor, I have to ask a question, and I mean this in all seriousness. Does the NAACP not realize that what they're doing is creating more division, and as the problem is that you mentioned, black-on-black crime is a bigger problem that maybe they should be dealing with? Let's get to the root of that issue. Don't they see what they're doing?
Yes, of course. They know exactly what they're doing, and they know how to raise funds. You had people from the Ford Foundation, and you had Wells Fargo, and people like that, who they have successfully gained funds and funding from because of this type of issue. There's money in the race hustling. There's not a lot of money in dealing with correcting true issues in the community. As long as you can inflame passion you can get the leftists or the progressive liberals to fund almost anything, because therein lies power in a voting bloc. Once you have them emotionally charged and captive, and that's what's happening here. I'm not saying that black folks don't have sense to determine the difference in manipulation and so forth. It's just that there is a historical attachment to skin color. In fact, that's what got Barack Hussein Obama elected, a person who no one knew who he was before, you know, he gave a speech at the Democratic Convention back in 2006.
So basically what you're telling me is the NAACP, not everyone within the NAACP, but the majority or the leaders thereof, are more concerned about the bottom line donations and dollars than they are about the welfare of black children.
Case in point, Wells Fargo, the NAACP, had brought a lawsuit, a discrimination lawsuit against Wells Fargo on behalf of Latinos and blacks. Wells Fargo agreed to kick in $175 million more into as a pledge to make more loans to a particular community. They dropped the lawsuit. So I'd like to track where that $175 went, first of all, but I do know that in some circles, that's known as extortion.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly what it is.
Yeah, yeah. And so that's the modus operandi that we're talking. That's what we're dealing with here. We're dealing with that type of client. Said yes, that goes directly to the bottom line.
Now, Pastor Brian, there's a question in the chat room from Holger. Ben Jealous, the head of the NAACP, obviously the organization follows his lead and his example. Can you go in a little bit about who Ben Jealous is? There's said that that he has white parents as well. Does any of that play into the direction that the NAACP is taking now, and in particular with this Trayvon Martin case?
Ben Jealous is a very highly educated individual. He's no fool. He was hand-chosen, hand-picked. He's from California. And he is indeed been a person who has transformed the operation of the organization, has led it steadily on a march toward progressive liberalism. He has forged, and even though he spouts non-partisanship, that is not what the organization is about these days. The organization is totally partisan in its views and in its approach to politics. But he has raised perhaps more money than any president before him, including Julian Bond. And so that's who you're dealing with. And the mistake that any of us would make as conservatives or people looking in from the outside is that you're dealing with people who are not educated, people who are stupid. These people know exactly what they're doing, and they're very good at it. And I think if I had any advice for the right, I think we should be as wise as foxes, just like these guys are, not chasing them further and further to the left, because that's a mistake that Republicans are making. But at least using the same passion to inflame our people, telling our story of what made this country the most exceptional country on earth, and telling that story in such a way that moves the imagination of young people. That's what the progressives and the liberals have been able to do, and that is to capture the minds and the emotions of young people. And if we lose that battle, we'll lose altogether.
You're saying that the conservative party, the Republican Party, rather than chasing the NAACP, they need to get back to the conservative roots of Constitution and Bill of Rights and get back to the basics rather than chasing the NAACP. Now, you've been on both sides of the fence. You've been a president within the NAACP, and now you are a Tea Party member and have taken a more conservative political view. What's your, put this into simple English that we can all understand. What do we need to do, and how do we beat this?
Well, again, young people are the key to all of this. We have to tell our story in such a way that's of interest to young people. We have to tell our story that it keeps their attention. And believe me, there are enough stories about the greatness of America and how we've overcome certain things in this country. And the contributions, the content of character. I'll be having a content of character tour on college campuses around the country. Certainly love to have a chance for you guys to help me with that. It's starting in the fall. And it will indicate to young people that what you bring to the table is much more important than what you take off the table. Heck, any fool can take stuff off the table, but it takes character. And this is what Martin Luther King was actually trying to tell the entire country when he said that he hoped the day would come when his four little children would be judged by the content of their character and not the color of their skin. But that dream has been hijacked by people who had a scheme. And the scheme was to create voting blocks. King never intended for that to happen. He simply wanted people to vote individually the way their finances dictated to them and wanted them to contribute in a manner that would make them participate in the American process, but by the content of their character, and then be judged by that, but not by what you look like or what somebody thinks you ought to be because of the color of your skin. That's what this tour will be about.
But how do we, Reverend Amos Brown of San Francisco, a member of the NAACP's National Board of Directors, said, quote, "We have been in a state of denial over the fact that this demon of racism has not been exorcised from our culture in this nation." He went on to say, quote, "We're a divided, unequal, and hostile nation on the issue of race. That is inflammatory to the 10th degree."
And that type of statement and that type of preaching does not in any way help the situation whatsoever, especially when you have young people who are cutting their teeth, perhaps for the first time at an NAACP convention. When you're feeding them that, you're fertilizing their minds with that type of rhetoric, that does not ease one of the most paradoxical things about our country. And the and one of the most paradoxical things about our country is even though we've overcome so much, still we find a way to wrap ourselves in skin color. One of the few countries who do that. Most countries identify themselves nationally. Jamaicans, they don't care anything about becoming black Americans. They just want to be Jamaicans. Same thing with Vietnamese, Russians. Immigrants who come here. They care nothing about being white Americans. They want to be identified as Russians. And same with Mexicans. Mexicans are very proud to be Mexicans. And they want to contribute to the country on that basis. But we who have been here for 400 and 500 years, whose ancestors settled this country, white and black, for some reason here in the year 2013, we still identify ourselves by colors instead of Americans.
That's a great business, though, Pastor. I mean, isn't it? It's a great business for Jesse Jackson, who holds up large corporations like Toyota and gets money from them.
Sure, but the same thing applies to, even though I'm a Republican and I'm a conservative, the same thing holds true to us. We find ourselves playing those same games and catering to those same types of games. As the great movie line was, Senator, we're both a part of the same hypocrisy. And until we get past, until we face up to the fact that we are a part of a hypocrisy in this country, and we're playing the, and unfortunately, many times, somehow, we as conservatives think that by playing the game more, that will bring in some votes that we didn't get. That's foolish. Ronald Reagan taught us and showed us that, as you were saying, at least alluding to, being who we are as conservatives and not running from that, and that's what we've been doing the last couple of presidential elections. We've actually run away from being conservative, thinking that what the progressives say about us is true, that the conservative banner is something folks will shy away from. No, they won't. Most Americans at their core, I'd say anyone who's 45 and over, at their core, they have solid conservative values. But if we run away from them and don't be who we are, we'll become less of who we are.
Very well put. Very well put. But do you think, though, there's a monopoly on the part of the progressives in labeling people a racist, labeling the Tea Partiers, labeling the conservatives racist, to the point where it made the conservatives afraid? You know, no one wants to be called a racist. And then you try to defend it, and, of course, then you have the hoof and mouth disease where you open your mouth and you insert both feet. But, you know, you don't want to be called a racist. So there's a clear monopoly on the part of the progressives to label conservatives racist.
I tell people across the country when I speak at various venues across the country, there's no sense in being afraid of being called a racist, because guess what? They're going to call you a racist anyway. So you might as well be who you are. You might as well stand on principle. If you're going to go down, at least go down on the principle that you believe in. Don't run away from that because somebody happens to call you a name. They're going to call you names anyway. Believe me, myself, Herman Cain, Alan West, Deneen Borelli, Star Parker, people like us, we paid a great price to be black conservatives. Now just to see white conservatives running away from being white conservatives, it's just for the sake of conversation, you know, to deal with color. Now you guys are running away from it when we've paid a price to be conservative. It supports.
Yeah. Now, can you give us some examples of the high price that you've paid to be conservative?
In my situation, I was the pastor of a church. I've pastored three churches across the country. Two of them were rather large congregations, but the last church that I pastored was just a small church that when I left there, we had built a $1.5 million new facility, but I brought them out of the woods, as you may have seen in the film, but we didn't show the new building in the movie. My deacons were very much opposed to me being a Tea Party member, and certainly when I made this movie called Runaway Slave, I thought they was going to lose their minds, and so they called a meeting on me. Usually I'm the one that called the meetings, but they called the meeting, and my chairman told me, he said, "Reverend, we want you to go back to being the guy you were 9 years ago when you came here, or we may have to think about doing something different." Direct threat. I saw that the Lord was broadening my pulpit all along, but what they couldn't see is that it was a way for them to be blessed. There are people all across this country who would bend over backwards to help any church or organization that I was a part of. But my deacons were adamant about it, and I certainly didn't want to tear up or split the church up, and so I saw that it was time to leave. So I led them out of the woods, led them to a place where they could actually thrive. And even though I'm not comparing myself to Moses, it's much like that story. I led them out of the wilderness to the promised land, but I myself, I never got a chance to go into that promised land with them.
Hmm. Well, I think you need to open up a church and call it, as Neil Bort says, the Church of the Painful Truth.
That'd be a good one. That'd be a good one. And I really admire Neil.
Got it? Or do you have anything else? Go ahead.
Yep. So what other trials and tribulations? Because your turn to conservatism, your means of income for your family, that you're playing it down a little bit, in my opinion, but that hits a man right where he lives the hardest.
Because sure it does.
Your job is to put food on the table for your family, and yet your friends, these are your friends. These are your buddies, and they turn on you, and then not only do they destroy your reputation, but they destroy your livelihood. And that, to me, is an evil response to politics. Not God, not religion, it's politics.
As someone once said, no good deed goes unpunished. Christ can even be an example of that. And so, but just the same, God is faithful. And he always has been faithful, and my faith has, in fact, kept me. When that door was closing, doors were opening for speaking engagements all across the country. And, of course, people were more than happy to give me gratuity to come and speak at various rallies, to share views and opinions. I mean, speakers with much with liberal causes all across the country spread all types of foolishness, but people were willing to help me spread the truth, and God has been very gracious in that matter, not to discount the fact that I'm certainly not a wealthy man or anything of that nature, but I can truly say that even though I left the church, I did have my concerns if I was doing the right thing by taking a hard stance the way I did. But if the Lord had stopped blessing me, if I had been hungry, if I had missed bill payments and those types of things, perhaps he would have been telling me that I had done the wrong thing. But the truth of the matter is none of that happened. He kept on blessing me, and my ministry kept growing, and right now my pulpit is from coast to coast and border to border.
So let's talk about this border-to-border pulpit. You have a radio show. When does it air? What station? You plug it? Do you have a website that our listeners?
Yes, go to RevCLBryant.com, RevCLBryant.com. I had the radio show. We had called it Hot Seat Radio. As you know, I'm a senior fellow with Freedom Works in Washington, D.C., as
right,
well.
Right.
And yes, and but go to RevCLBryant.com. I also write a column for a regional magazine, and again, I speak all over. I'm in Orlando now. I'll leave here and I'll head for Iowa, and from Iowa I'll go to Atlanta, and I'm always on the road. I crisscross the nation at least once a month, so I'm busy. I'm very, very busy. So I had to leave the radio show because I didn't have time to actually do it. As you know, putting on any type of show for any length of time is work that you have to put in. And putting together messages and speeches for various groups across the country, that's also work because you only get one shot at telling people your story and encouraging them about this great nation of ours. And so I have to be prepared whenever I go in. Glenn Beck, a good friend of mine, I just left Utah, Salt Lake, with him and Freedom Works last week. We did the Free the People with Freedom Works, and then we did with him Man in the Moon, which was a tremendous thing. And he has been a great friend to help push our efforts, and Freedom Works, of course, is family.
Reverend, are you seeing a change in the black community, the impact that you're having and your organization is having, that you don't have to be indentured to the Democratic Party or the government? You do have the ability, and there is opportunity in this country, irrespective of the color of your skin.
Yes. In fact, you'll remember that Elbert Guillory, when he changed parties a couple of months ago
yeah.
Now, he actually switched parties at a function that I was giving. It was called the At Large Conference in Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And in the video that Elbert did to tell why he changed from Republican to Democrat, you'll notice, if you've seen my film, that he used direct quotes and comments from Runaway Slave, the movie, in making that statement. And Sean and Hannity, and when he was on Glenn and others, he gave us the credit for that. And we certainly do appreciate it. But yes, it is making a difference in the lives of black politicians and black people. It's giving them a vehicle to help them come out of the closet. And actually understand that there are other people who are standing with them, white and black. Many times peer pressure is one of the things that causes folks to shut up and just go along to get along. But that is one of the things that we hope to erase, and we're beginning to see that happen.
You know, Barack Obama, when he released his statement after the verdict, said that this has been a great tragedy in America. The Trayvon Martin's death has been a great tragedy for America. What do you see tragic in America? I'm still trying to figure out how Trayvon Martin's death is a tragedy for America, considering the racial divide that's been trying to drive the wedge in this country since the trial began, or since the event occurred.
The tragedy in America for me, when I see the leader of the free world involved in something like this, is that the office of presidency lends itself to this type of thing, and then other leaders refer to Trayvon Martin as Emmett Till or Medgar Evers. Those are two civil rights icons, and this was certainly not anything that rose anywhere close to that to that occasion. And it's sad when you see that's the tragedy in America, is that you have such race hustling going on over something. Again, if I was a black man and Trayvon was banging my head on the ground and I could get to my gun and shoot him, I think in that situation, if the facts that we have and that the facts that exonerated George Zimmerman are true, Trayvon would still be dead. And the thing, though, is nobody would know about it because I'm a black man and he was black and nobody would care. And so that's the tragedy in America. Not that a 17-year-old kid, even though that is tragic, lost his life. The tragedy is that we're building and making an icon out of something that does not rise to that level. That's the tragedy, and the president himself is lending himself to it.
So why do you think this has been made such an issue? I mean, if you eloquently... You described this very elegantly, and I guess I'm not grasping then why did the black community, these black separatists, wrap their hands around the Trayvon Martin shooting death and exploiting it to the point where they try to make it out to be a civil rights issue?
The progressives many times will do this, and the news media is very guilty of this. They will take a circumstance like the one that happened there in Sanford, and of course, you know, Sharpton and others have their shows on networks like MSNBC and so forth. So their job, they have a job to do, and that job is to make certain that they keep a certain block of people in line. And what has kept them in line over the years is emotions. And that's what has kept them in line. So when something like this comes along, as I forget who said it was, Emanuel, Rahm Emanuel, he said, you can't let a crisis go to waste. And if there's not one, you have to create one. And so what better to try and paint Zimmerman as some type of white Hispanic who shot a kid with Skittles and an Arizona tea. I mean, you know, leaving out the fact that Zimmerman may have been stupid for getting out of his car. We give him that. But also Trayvon had a lot of time to go home. He could have gone home. So you have two flawed and perhaps stupid individuals on a certain night who happen to run into each other, meet each other. They tangle up. One guy gets his head beat on the ground, and he does whatever he can to make that stop. That has nothing to do with race. It has to do with survival and stupidity.
Well, you know, you've mentioned that now. I think I counted three times in the last probably 5 minutes about George Zimmerman's head being bashed against the ground, beaten. And I think that's more than I've heard it. In the last 2 years, or last year, I should say.
Mm-hmm.
So you're just going by facts, then, are you? What's wrong with you?
If that is true, if it's true, then any one of us listening, any one of us talking about it, if you've ever been hit in the back of the head, if you've ever banged your head in the back, if you've been hit in the back of the head or had your head hit on the ground, I have. I've played football and so forth, even with a helmet on. When your head is rattled, even with a helmet on, your brain still rattles around in there. And if what the evidence says is so, then the human instinct, and I'm not a psychologist or anything of that nature, or psychiatrist or anything of that nature, but I do have a degree in counseling, and I have been a pastor, and of course, again, I have been an athlete, and I know about the instinct to survive. And if you can make that stop, I don't care if you think that your life is in jeopardy, and that's what it ultimately boiled down to for the jurors. They actually felt that Zimmerman thought, that his life was in danger. That's the letter of the law. And so we paint Trayvon as some kid with Skittles and some kid with an Arizona tee, but it wasn't the Skittles or the Arizona tee banging this guy's head against the cement or the grass. Granted, if he'd stayed in his car, nothing happens. Trayvon goes home, nothing happens. Two stupid people meet on a dark and rainy night. One of them gets killed. It has nothing to do with race.
Very well put.
I'm curious if I can sneak a question in, Vito.
Go ahead.
Pastor, since you're a conservative, as well as being black, I'd like to get your take on this. How much do you believe or do you think that the Obama administration is pushing this forward to cover up, keeping the media off his back about all the various scandals that are going on right now within the administration?
You would think that America would wise up now just about every time the president gets cornered in this or the administration gets cornered in that. Something like this comes up conveniently to divert attention mm-hmm. from what the true issues are. This president has been very fortunate in that area from this second election of his to this very thing, and this Trayvon Martin thing is concerned. America's character and reputation in the world, the way we're viewed in the world, there's no question it has been hurt under this administration. When we start looking at how the president's ratings are slipping and all of those types of things, something like this always comes along. So, and it's sad to appear presidential over something that's so silly. And, so not saying that it's trivial that a kid loses his life. Kid loses his life. But guess what? Again, the kid goes home and tells his parents, if he wants to use the words that he was using, he tells his parents, some creepy guy's following me. He's still alive. Zimmerman stays in his car instead of following this kid after, who knows what happened, he's still alive. So it was a perfect storm to cause this. Either one of them making a different decision, this doesn't happen.
Mr. Bryan, we have a caller on the line who's been very patient. This is Chris from Orlando. Chris, welcome to the Radio Jihad Show, and you're speaking with Mr. Bryant.
Thank you, Alan. And Pastor Bryant, it's a pleasure to speak to you and to listen to you today. I've been very impressed and even touched by some of the things you've had to say. Alan knows me, and I'm a conservative, have always been, and have been in a situation similar in a very general way to yours when you left the last church, and that I've resigned as the head of two volunteer organizations on matters of principle in the last several years. I think they probably were glad to see me go, but I was sad to leave. I wasn't able to serve to the extent that I had hoped. More recently, I'm a member of a very substantial church in Orlando, one of the largest downtown churches. And in the last election, a group of us ran a voter registration drive prior to the election, and our understanding with the church administration was that we would be allowed, in fact, we felt encouraged to hand out voter guides during the last month before the election. But after we'd finished the drive, we were told in no uncertain terms that we would not be allowed to hand out the voter guides. This is just one of several situations like this that I've run into, one of which was I had a roster of six speakers, including a couple of pastors and a professor at the local university who are experts on the subject of Islam. I had arranged for them to speak on six consecutive weekends, Sundays, to a Sunday school class on the subject of Islam in America and its history around the world, and we were stopped from proceeding with that as well. My question is, what advice do you have for attempting or succeeding in changing the attitude of a church which I'm beginning to think is simply chicken? I want to hear from my pulpit, the pulpit in my church, about the ways in which my liberties are being compromised by my government. I want to hear about what I can do to confront this, since my rights are natural rights, they're unalienable, and they're under threat by my government. I would expect my church leadership to address this, and I haven't been successful. Do you have any advice for me?
Many of the church leaders are not rendering unto Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and unto God the things that are God. And what I mean, God's, and what I mean by that is this. The reason Christ said that was because it was very clear that there were certain church leaders many times.
Hello, I'm losing you. I'm sorry, I can't hear you.
Okay, can you hear me now?
Much
yes,
better.
Now?
Yep.
Okay, a lot of the church leaders don't realize that when their congregants leave that congregation, they go out into the world of Caesar's. And unless they are equipped with the right ammunition from that pulpit, Caesar has his way with their thinking, and he programs them through various means. The print media, the news, the television media, movies, what have you. And children are certainly indoctrinated in our school systems. And our church leaders, unfortunately, do not enforce in the minds of their congregants or equip their congregants with things to arm them against Caesar. And so I always encourage so many who have the type of situation that you've just described. Of course, you can't leave every church you go to, but many times churches are just as political as any party or any civic group that you would come upon. Church politics sometimes is the most vicious of all politics. But the idea is this, and Christ gave us this idea. When you go into a congregation as a pastor, as a minister, as you are, and they will not hear you, and you know that you're sharing the word of God, then you're instructed to shake the dust off of your feet. Because so many of our churches today have been infiltrated and bought by liberals and liberal ideals. And so many times it is, you have to know when it's time to go, and you have to know what fights to pick, and know what hill to fight on. And it's a very difficult question to answer, but I would say let your prayers and your conscience guide you. And, of course, let the Lord's word order your steps.
Thank you. May I ask a second question, please?
Sure. Yes. And, gentlemen, in about we're showing my film, and there it's about. I have about 10 minutes before I have to get back in. I have to leave you at about 5.
Okay.
So go ahead.
My question has to do with the film. I'm a producer. Alan has known me for a while, and I've produced a number of films, including a feature and several documentaries and lots of other stuff. And we are working on another project which we hope and pray will become a feature documentary, not unlike what you did. But I'm asking you primarily about how you went about securing distribution. That's the next major hurdle that I think we face.
It takes money. And you have to have people who believe in that project enough to throw money at it. Our film cost us right at $1.5 million to make. I filmed it all across the country, and we even shot footage in Israel. But of course, we couldn't make that. Israel couldn't quite tie that Israel story in the way we wanted. As you may know, our film has won the Crystal Dove Award for Best Picture and Limited Release, and we did win awards at the Gwinnett Film Festival in Atlanta. So it is, and of course, it took nearly 2.5-3 years to do it, and the money came in very slow. But I would encourage you, and of course, the people who came on board to help us distribute it, Rocky Mountain Distributors, again, it's a pay-to-play thing. That's why most Christians have not been able to crack that ceiling, because so many of us depend on our own fellows, our own Christians, people to help us, and many times that help is not there. And so,
yeah.
But if you believe in it, if you believe in it, and like I said about trusting God, he will open doors that you cannot see. He certainly did that for us.
Chris,
thank you
very
much
for the call. We're running short on time. Reverend Brian,
thank you very much.
God bless you,
thank
gentlemen.
Thank you, Chris.
Good night. Now, Reverend, Holder in the chat room would like you to talk about your autobiography and your upcoming book and plug that as well. And then if you could just give us a closing statement after that and the message that you'd like to leave our listeners with.
Certainly. I encourage all of you to follow me at Rev. C.L. Bryant. That's my Twitter handle, at Rev. C.L. Bryant. And my official website is RevCLBryant.com, RevCLBryant.com. There you'll see the Journey to Liberty that will soon be out. I've encouraged, and I have been told by my good friend Glenn Beck that he would write the foreword for me, and the president and CEO of FreedomWorks, Mr. Matt Kibbe, is going to write the introduction for that for me. The book itself is complete. Just need to go through the editing as well. And that portrait that you'll see there on the face of that book is a portrait that I was honored with by an artist you may recognize his name, John McNaughton. He painted the portrait of Obama burning the Constitution, and he honored me with that portrait. The life-size portrait is available, and you can get in touch with me through the website or contact me. And I want to leave you all with this thought that America is, in fact, still the greatest land on the face of the earth, a very exceptional country, the greatest success story that the world has ever known. I think we all should be very proud that whether or not your ancestors came here on the Mayflower or whether they came here in slave ships like mine, in the DNA of every true American is a thirst for liberty and freedom. And so God bless you and God keep all of you. And you can always contact me. Love to come to where you are and share with you the great ideals and ideas that I have about our great land. Thank you so much. God bless the Republic.
Thank you.
God bless you, too.
Bye now.
And please give Glenn Beck our regards. Wow.
Well, that was a great interview, Vito.
Yeah, it was, man. It really was. What a man, and what a conviction on his part, huh? I mean, you know, he's not afraid to back down from what he believes in, and it's refreshing. I guess he saw the light, and he moved forward, man. There's the true forward, right?
At a high price he paid.
Exactly.
He lost his friends. He lost his his church, his, he lost everything. And he felt that he was on a different path, and he embraced it, and he's just doing outstanding work. That's the voice that America needs to hear, especially black youth, minorities. That's the voice they need to hear. But the NAACP is shutting him out because he is a conservative voice. The NAACP is the advancement of colored people, not one type of colored person, liberal or conservative. It should be all colored people.
Yeah, and you know, you got to give him credit for standing his ground and actually reporting on, you know, what the NAACP really has done to the image and what their intent is for the to enslave the black community.
Yeah, and we got somebody on the phone. We have someone who wants to talk about the ASPCA. Who is that loud person in the background? Oh, that's a dog.
Oh.
ASPCA? All right, okay.
Yeah,
so I tried. It wasn't very funny.
But, you know, well, you know, that's the anti-Muslim voice.
Oh, no dogs allowed.
Hey, let's recognize some people in the chat room, and hold on 1 second here, and kind of get everybody going here. All right, should we?
All right,
all right. Before we do that, let's. I do want to do one thing here, and hopefully my board is working. Okay. And
well, if it stops working, let me know and I'll run through the names.
Okay. You want to I mean, how much better can you get to align yourself with Glenn Beck? I mean, you know, that kind of gives you some credibility right away, wouldn't you say?
Mm-hmm.
Let's take a quick break here, okay? So hold on, everybody, just take a quick break. We'll be right back, okay? I don't know if it's going to work. No. Damn.
Well, rather than having dead air, Alan, if you'll give the boot to that person there, that would be greatly appreciated.
To who?
His name is Unemo Gangsta.
Yeah.
Oh, someone in the chat room.
Yeah,
right,
disrupted my show in the past. He does this everywhere he goes.
Yeah.
As you can see what he's saying.
You know, he's just another jackass that decides that he gets his 15 minutes of fame or 15 seconds of fame.
No, that was the reason the reason my dog
like
started getting upset.
Yeah, I heard that. Hey, we'd like to thank Doc DLB and the East Anglican EDL show. Eric from Iowa, always great to see you. Freedom Wings.
Wait a minute. Vito. Let's interrupt you for a second on Freedom Wings. Diane's last show is going to be coming up here. She's been on the radio for 5 years, 3 days a week, 2 hours a show. And, you know, she's done an outstanding job, and I'm sorry that didn't catch her when she first started, and I think we've made a pretty good Blog Talk Radio friend. So, Diane, good luck to you, and you're always welcome on this show, fellow Floridian, and if you want to rant, I just want you to know you have a venue to do so. So, God bless you, and good luck, Diane. We're going to miss you.
Good luck, Diane.
Okay. Go ahead, Al. Green, though.
Well, I hope she calls. Well, I hope I got rid of email. I hope Diane will call in to our show and Gotti's show and all the other shows on the network, because we still want to hear your voice.
Great. We got Green Dog. Vorp, good to see you again. Guests are 2576-2686 and 3658. Holger, holy cannoli, Holger Awakens. James Trowbridge, good evening, James. Mary, 13531, one of Vito's Vixens. Ooh. Oh, speaking of Vito's Vixens, Poppy from across the pond. Good evening, Poppy. Rabbi Nachman. Good evening. Red Fox Blogger. Kel, infidels are watching you, baby. Vito Esposito. Where the hell did that putz come from? Echo, good to see you, Echo. Luchadora, my Twitter buddy. MP91, Eliza, catch Eliza Wednesday evenings from 6 to 7.30 p.m. right here in the Radio Jihad Network. And Urban Infidel, good evening. Didn't mean to take over there, Al.
Oh, no, keep on going.
Okay, well, but there's nobody else in the chat room.
Oh, well, we had a good turnout. We have close to 25 people at one point. I tell you, Reverend Bryant, what an outstanding guest. He's the voice of the future, and I hope flocks of people, I hope everybody will go to his website, help him out financially if you can, because his voice is important. I hope the idiots at the Republican Party, national, I hope that they listen and take the advice of Reverend Bryant and embrace conservatism and stop chasing the liberals. You can't be more liberal than a liberal. It just doesn't work.
Well, do you think that with the defection of that black congressman to the Republican Party, do you think that could start a wave? And you have to think that there are some African-American politicians who are absolutely dumbstruck at what this administration is doing and why is Obama taking the position he is and continually driving the racial issue and playing the racial card. I mean, here's a guy that's dividing and conquering this nation, and you got to think at some point in time there has to be some astute black congressmen or women who are going to say enough is enough. I mean, we know there's the African American congresswomen and men who are bought and paid for, Sheila Jackson Lee, Kareem Brown, the Guam representative who thought Guam was going to tilt and fall over into the ocean. Those, you're never going to change their racist minds. They're always going to play the victim card. But do you think that there can be a defection and where, you know, a lot of the African American community says enough is enough? You know, we're tired of being slaves to the Democratic Party, because that's what they are.
Yeah.
They're indentured.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be hard fought. I mean, take the Jewish voting bloc. The Jewish voting bloc is the same way. They're starting to defect to the Republican Party because the Democratic Party is leaving them. But it's like Reverend Bryant said, I think it's proper messaging from the Republican Party and embracing conservative values, and I think that's their strongest point. But they're being influenced by political strategists who believe that you have to search out and say the right things to get people to make the tent bigger, and you got to be more liberal to make the tent bigger. And in fact, the fact of the matter is, in my opinion, is keep the tent the same size, just get back to Constitution and Bill of Rights and core conservative values. Leave the social stuff alone. That's state rights anyway. Let that be. Just get back to conservative physical politics, and we'll be good. Will it happen? Heck, I don't know. We'll see.
Well, Gotti made it. I think you had a great question in there, Gotti, and that was Obama diverting attention away from his scandal after scandal. The embarrassment of this presidency, Benghazi, Fast and Furious. You notice how, you know, Fast and Furious has not gone away. Last week, a Mexican sheriff was killed by the Department of Justice Fast and Furious weapon. And, you know, if it wasn't for the Trayvon Martin Zimmerman case, that should have been front news, where yet another individual dies at the hands of the Obama Eric Holder gun running scheme.
Well, I'd like to quote Eric Holder about the sheriff that died last weekend.
Oh,
That's a death that shouldn't have happened.
Because really?
He said that today about Trayvon Martin. Let's talk about all the people that have been killed by his guns.
Yeah, over somewhere in the vicinity of 10,000 Mexican nationals, two American security border security agents, you know, and now we find yet another Mexican national killed at the hands of the gun-running scheme by Eric Holder and Sheikh Obama. Interesting. And so it shouldn't have happened then, right? That the death of that Mexican sheriff should not have happened. So
exactly.
The gun-running scheme, in a quest to squash the Second Amendment of the United States Constitution, which was within the first term of Obama's administration, that was lost to the George Zimmerman trial. How convenient is that?
Well, you know, and I have to give credit where credit's due, as I always do, especially when it comes to the rabbi, because he answers to a much higher calling than me. The rabbi is actually the one who pointed out on my show and did it step by step. Each so-called scandal that has occurred under the Obama administration, even going back prior to this particular 4 years that he's in now, each time something has happened, there's been a convenient thing that the government has pushed forward into the media to kind of sweep that scandal under the proverbial prayer rug. You know, whether it was Fast and Furious, IRS, the AP, and I forget the reporter's name from Fox
James
News.
Rosen,
thank you. And, you know, also Benghazi. And, I mean, we could go down the list, and each time if you go back and look at what was big in the media, something mysteriously was being pushed by the government or the administration to not necessarily cover it up, but to, you know, put something else ahead of it and distract. Exactly.
Yeah, you know, if you think about it, if George Bush would have done, you know, listen, I'm not saying George Bush was the greatest president, but if Bush would have done, or his administration would have engaged in this type of activity, the media would have been frothing at the mouth. They would have never left the White House press room.
He would have been impeached.
He would have been impeached. You're exactly right.
And rightfully so.
And rightfully so,
yes.
Exactly.
Thank you, Al. You're absolutely correct, and rightfully so.
Right. There's some other news. Oh, I'm sorry, go on.
No, go ahead.
Oh, I was going to talk about 60,000 Congo refugees heading to Uganda. And guess why?
Why
would 60,000 refugees leave the Congo?
Lottery? Do they have a Powerball?
No. No Powerball. No Powerball at the watering hole.
The Kevin Mutombo is moving?
No.
There was a white Hispanic Hebrew chasing them with a gun? just taking a guess, you know?
Yeah. No, over the weekend, an Al-Qaeda-linked militant group attacked a town in the North Kivu province. Where have we heard this story over again? Spokesman for the Uganda Red Cross said the number of refugees was still growing, with people camped out at four primary schools. 60,000 because Al-Qaeda is attacking another township in sub-Saharan Africa. Meanwhile, our President Barack Obama is backing the Muslim Brotherhood, which is the international terrorist groups of all international terrorist groups. They backed the wrong horse, and they're doubling down on it, and nobody is saying word one about it.
And, you know, it's not an issue of the United States backing the Muslim Brotherhood, you know, backing the wrong horse. You know, I'm going to take exception to that phrase, backing the wrong horse.
The wrong camel.
Because, yeah, all right, it's the camel, right? Backing the wrong horse implies that that they made a decision and they were wrong in that decision. You know, it was like they weighed the facts and they were incorrect. The issue is Sheikh Obama, from the very beginning of his administration, and while we can't say for certain that it occurred even while he was a senator, or even before his political rise, he has supported the Muslim Brotherhood. So it's not an issue where he woke up one day and his national security advisor said, you know, Barack, we should support the Muslim Brotherhood and legitimize them, the group that was banned for 60-plus years in Egypt as a terrorist organization. No, this is something that Obama has made a conscious decision even before he was president of the United States. Now that he's president of the United States, he carries that big stick and he wields it. And, I really do take exception to the reference that he's backed the wrong horse. He's in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood. The Muslim Brotherhood has infiltrated the United States government. The Muslim Brotherhood has walked through the front door of the White House thanks to Sheikh Obama. It's not a revelation that he had that they just went ahead and this administration decided to back the Muslim Brotherhood because of the Arab Spring. No, Obama had made a conscious decision well before this to back the Muslim Brotherhood. His June 4th, 2009 Cairo speech legitimized the Muslim Brotherhood. They've been banned. That was the first step when he knew that he could undermine Hosni Mubarak and remove him from office. So, you know, this. Let's not make it sound like that there's a naivety about Obama and his administration. There's a calculation with this guy and his administration. He could give a crap about the sovereignty of the United States of America or the Constitution of the United States. His agenda is to promote the Muslim Brotherhood and elevate them to legitimacy. So I'm taking the other side of the coin on this one. And that's my story, okay. And I'm sticking to it.
As you should.
Good point. Yeah, you're absolutely right. He is in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood ideologically, and he's supporting the whole Arab Spring, or Arab Winter, or whatever you want to call it. He is a supporter of the Sunnis. Yet at the same time, there's another story that one of our drones took out some more terrorists.
Ooh.
Which is a good thing.
Wow.
And many Guantanamo prisoners quit their month-long hunger strike. You know why?
Why?
Well, they quit it because they were going to take away their privileges to pray, have communal praying as in a group, and being able to eat in a group. So rather than lose those privileges, they decided to call off their hunger strike. It's political terrorism at a terrorist prison. We have such a profound our government has such a profound misunderstanding of Islamic doctrine and theology. We can't even admit that they're the enemy or our adversaries.
Well, it's not that we can't, we won't. You know,
right.
The Muslim Brotherhood is an integral part of Sheikh Obama at this point. Remember, the Ikhwan, the Muslim Brotherhood, seeks to destroy America from within. Now, when your enemy writes in black and white and writes it, and it's a concrete message that we are going to destroy you from within, and the leader of the free world embraces this totalitarian dominating ideology, one has to ask why. Now, you can sit there and say that the guy's an idiot, that phrase is thrown out there. Oh, he's an imbecile. He doesn't know what he's doing. Obama knows exactly what he's doing. He's bankrupting America. We all can agree with that. You know, you don't take a $100 million trip to Africa. You don't take 600 people on a G8 summit when the United Kingdom has 20 people. He spends money. Over $1 billion in travel so far, and we have an economic crisis in this country. He's kept us totally dependent upon OPEC and foreign oil sources. He came up with some lame excuse about it takes 12 years to drill and to bring that oil to market. It takes 12 years. That's an absolute flat-out lie. And the Republicans, a conservative mantra, the media has never called him on this. it takes 3 years or less to bring oil from the ground to the marketplace, and we could be self-sufficient. But now we have this so-called uprising in Egypt where we get less than 1% of our oil from, and now we're watching gas prices rise again. They're going to approach $4 by the time this summer is over. Why? Now food costs are up. The cost of goods and services go up. Truckers start passing the cost on to transport goods and service goods around the United States. Your furniture is going to get more expensive. Our food costs are going to increase again. What about fuel oil for the wintertime? Our seniors, they're going to have to make a choice between feeding themselves and buying fuel, buying oil to heat their houses. You know, this guy is getting a constant pass. He has abrogated his fiduciary responsibility to the American people. We can drill. We can be self-sufficient for 500 years. And you know what, Al? I could give a shit what happens 500 years from now. Get that oil out of the ground. Bring it to the marketplace. Give me $20 a barrel. Give me a dollar a gallon gasoline. And you watch this economy start coming back, roaring back on eight cylinders. Hell, probably 10 cylinders like a Mercedes. But no, we have all this bullshit going on around the United States. Now you got the hostage taking in Washington, D.C., where the city council is mandating that Walmart pay their employees $12.25 an hour. Why? You don't require other grocery stores to do it. Oh, well, the union contract. Who cares about the union contracts? That's part of the problem. So free enterprise has been constantly been attacked in the United States since 2008, since this Yahoo became president, since this anti-American, left-wing, radical Marxist became president of the United States. I don't have anything else to say.
No, you couldn't have said it any better. That Walmart story pissed me off. Since when does a county commission tell a private industry what they can, what they have to pay their employees? That's fascist.
Since 2008.
Yes.
Well, yeah.
Since 2008.
Right. They took over. Yeah. Yeah, that's chipping away at our capitalist system. And everybody's quiet about it.
San Francisco, minimum wage in San Francisco is $10 an hour. You know what? Screw you. You got a $65 billion debt in your state. You can't get your fiscal house in order, but you're going to tell business how they're supposed to run. You know what? I'm going to pick up my happy-ass business and move to another state.
Come
now what are you going to do? Oy vey. Well, you know what you're going to do? You're going to, on Tuesday night, you're going to listen to Andrew Bezat from 11 p.m. to 12 a.m. Eastern Standard Time right on the Radio Jihad Network. Andrew is fantastic, a scholar in both Christianity and Islam. Biggest threat to Islam is he understands Islam and he speaks the language. Poor bastards. They don't know what hit them. Wednesday, Eliza, MP91. Eliza's in the chat room now, 6 o'clock to 7:30 p.m. She has a co-host, Luchadora, my Twitter buddy. Listen to Eliza. Thursday evenings, we have Gotti Edelman, America Akbar, 8 p.m. to 10 p.m. Eastern Standard Time with the esteemed, beautiful Reese Cup.
And the rabbi.
And the rabbi. Oy vey, how could I forget the rabbi?
I don't know, but you're going to hell for that one.
Listen, if that's the only thing I'm going to hell for, thank God.
Yeah, let's not bring that up.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't want to get short with you there. It's a tall order to go. Saturday evenings, Osama Dak Duck, Straightway of Grace Ministry. Osama, don't start, Gotti.
I'm sorry.
Osama speaks fluent Arabic. He understands both Christianity and Islam, and he's a scholar in Christianity. And let me tell you, the biggest intimidator for Muslims. I've been on Twitter, and I've seen the verbiage and the exchanges, and Muslims are afraid of him, which is absolutely beautiful. So, Osama Dakduk, Straight Way of Grace Ministry. Sunday, Uncle Dave's Right Wing Radio Rag, from 8 p.m. to 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time on the Radio Jihad Network. Go to our website, www.radiojihad.org. Check out our new website and like us on Facebook. And, of course, Twitter is hashtag Radio Jihad Network. Friend us or tweet it or be our Twitter buddy. What the hell is it called? Tweet us? Tweet us nice.
God.
I want to thank everybody in the chat room. Thank you for joining us this evening. Thank you, everyone, on podcast. We really appreciate your input on this, and let's keep the faith. God bless our troops, and God bless America. Radio Jihad, striving to educate America. Bye-bye.
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 Bye-bye. Bye-bye.
Short jokes. He makes short jokes.
Are they picking on you, Gotti?
No, it was a private thing that we can't get into now.
Okay, that's all right.
I'll tell you later. Yeah,
no,
you're
won't.
On a need-to-know basis, and you don't need to know.
I don't need to know. I don't want to know.
Alan,
you're not even
on
the short list.
Alan, did you see that I called you earlier this afternoon?
The what now?
Did you see that I called you this afternoon?
No, I did not. I must have missed that.
Well,
you had your shot at being into the secret classified short story, but...
It was big news.
Oh my God! The height of this, I'm telling you.
The height of this. Yeah. Well, I'm gonna go watch the Home Run Derby, and.
Yeah, that's right.
All-Star Game tomorrow night should be fun.
Mhm. You're fired up for the All-Star Game, huh?
No, I'm not fired up. I like to watch it, though. They have some good talents out there, and it's weird. I used to be a real never would miss it, and it's I don't know. As you get older, it's I don't know. Only two Yankees made the All-Star team, so it's not even worth watching.
Good. Well, they're having a rough year, but hey.
Yeah, they are. Yeah, they are. Rough is very kind.
Well, the baseball All-Star game is much more enjoyable than the NBA All-Star game. So
let's just see if they can make it through the baseball All-Star game without bringing up the name Trayvon or Zimmerman.
Oh, you bet.
Exactly.
You know, I'll tell you, that Dwayne Wade comment, that Twitter comment that he sent out there really hit a nerve. You know, what do I tell my sons? Are they that blind to racism that they can't see? And you know, really, when you think about it, the media has done a great job in skewing the entire republic. And that is, you're innocent until proven guilty. And nowhere has that been said in the media for the last year and a half. You're innocent until proven guilty. They refer to Nidal Hassan as the alleged shooter at Fort Hood, November 4th, 2009. The alleged shooter. 4 years later, he's still the alleged shooter. 31 people watched him jump on a table, yell Allah Akbar, and shoot and kill 13 fellow soldiers. He's still the alleged shooter. But George Zimmerman, he's the murderer who killed Trayvon Martin. No witnesses, but he's the murderer that killed Trayvon Martin. He didn't shoot him. He killed him. He's not the alleged shooter. He is the killer, George Zimmerman. Just the fact that they've skewed that whole discussion, it has really, it's really altered the whole perception of reality, especially in the black community. And for Dwayne Wade to say, what do I say to my sons? Oh my God! It's how freaking stupid is that?
I don't know. It's like you give them the victimhood mantle, and it is so appealing that they grasp for it.
Yes, even a millionaire.
Victimhood. Yeah.
Well, you know what? We've seen that with come on now. We see it with CARE and Islam. They've got a you want to talk about an organization that exploits the victimhood status. So I guess we shouldn't be surprised. I mean, when you have the NAACP and the black left-wing progressive leaders, they exploit that victimhood status, as does the Council on American Islamic Race Relations. I mean, that's their whole existence, is to exploit the victimhood status.
Yeah, and CARE is pushing, I got one of their news briefs today, they're pushing for Eric Holder and the Department of Justice to file a civil rights complaint against George Zimmerman.
What did he shoot a Muslim too?
No, they want them to file a civil rights complaint because that'll set the precedent for them. Anytime the follower of Islam is singled out for a crime they committed, they can now say it's a civil rights issue, and it's not. It's a crime. It's a criminal issue.
Did you veto? Talking about the sports that you were talking about, did you see what Victor Cruz wrote on Twitter?
No.
Because, of course, now he's backpedaling and trying to apologize. He wrote on Twitter, Zimmerman doesn't last a year before the hood catches up with him.
Oh, so they're, again, you're innocent until proven guilty, but now he's guilty irrespective of his innocence. Hmm.
Well, that seems like a downright threat.
Yes,
why
it is.
Why do guys who are making millions, he just signed that huge contract with the Giants.
Mm-hmm.
They put their mouth in gear before their brain, evidently. I thought these guys were smarter than that, but...
But where's the civil rights charges that Zimmerman can lodge now against these people?
I'd like to see Zimmerman sue. Well, obviously, he's got a lawsuit against NBC, as we all know. I'd like to see him sue the DOJ.
Oh, without a doubt. Without a doubt. And you know, Alan, to your point, I also think that we should find the names of those people that CARE swindled out of tens of thousands of dollars that by CARE hiring a bogus lawyer, a man that represented himself as a lawyer, and swindled fellow Muslims. Maybe it's time that those Muslims that were seeking legal help from CARE file a civil rights charge, violation charge against CARE. I mean, they are the largest civil rights group, Muslim civil rights group in the United States. So don't you think maybe, just maybe, that those Muslims that were swindled by CARE should file a civil rights charge against them?
They should. And the girls that they fired, the Shia Muslims who were employed by CARE, that they fired them when they found out they were Shia and not Sunni.
Well, that's racial discrimination, isn't it?
That's a civil rights issue, too. Yes.
Huh. How does CARE get away from that? How does CARE get around that, then? That's also an NLRB issue.
Should be.
I give up.
We're not giving up.
I give up.
No.
It's just way too much of a tall order for me. Well, Vito.
Well, that's very big of you.
Thanks. It's big of me. Okay.
I didn't say big of me. I said it was big of you.
Right. Big of me. gentlemen, on that note, before I get myself in more trouble with my little self, I'm going to...
Short temper, little self.
Short temper, right.
Your short temper.
I got a short fuse, look out. Great show tonight, guys. You all take care, and I'm going to log off of here before I say something I shouldn't.
All right,
Gotti.
Thanks for being on, Gotti.
Good questions
tonight. Okay, bye.
Bye.
Adios.
Hey, good show, man. Very good. Thanks for getting CL on. He was fantastic.
wasn't it a breath of fresh air? That was like oxygen in a room, in a burning building.
So level-headed and just absolutely wonderful, man. Just absolutely wonderful to listen to.
Yeah, you should check out his movie, Runaway Slave, if you can get your hands on it.
I will do that. Thanks. I will definitely do that.
All right.
Have a good evening.
Adios.
Ciao.
Adios.
Bye.